Good afternoon. Welcome to Warrior Soul Podcast, Episode 12. My name's Chris Albert, and I'm the host and owner of Warrior Soul Apparel. And today, we're going to be having a very special guest on. Just to set it up for you, I want you to think about a concept and a stage of life that all of you have been through in one way or another. And that is transition. Transition is rough for a lot of people because it entails doing something that has been very difficult for all living things throughout time, and that is adaptation. A lot of us like to think of Darwin's theory of evolution as, and we simplify it down to thinking that only the strong survive. But the fact is that it's not always the strong that survive. In fact, being strong really has very little to do with it. I mean, we could look at the dinosaurs. We could look at Tyrannosaurus Rex. We can look at people we know who've perished. We can look at people we know who've taken themselves off of this earth. And we can look to another factor that is more powerful than strength, that's not as unidimensional. And that's adaptation. The ability to adapt to any situation you're put into, and the ability to relearn your environment, to make yourself get smarter as it pertains to the environment you're dealing with. And when we think about everything today going on with the veteran community, you know, I've always said I don't believe it's because veterans are broken or because they're weak. It's just a matter of adaptation. It's a matter of understanding what we need to do to transition, what we need to learn. And in my mind, it's an understanding that we have to look at it like a process. None of us were born soldiers, sailors, Marines, or airmen, or anything else to do with the military. Sorry, my speech is all screwed up today. You know, we had to go through training. We had to go on a journey. We had to go on a journey of transformation. And similarly, those of us who are venturing off from our military careers and into the civilian world, we also have to go on that journey. And it's going to be a process. It's going to be a process of starting at the beginning, going through some things, having some achievements and then some fallbacks. And then eventually getting to where you want to go. But it starts with a plan. It starts with an idea and a plan of how you're going to get there. And while that might not be clear to you right off the bat, it'll never be clear to you unless you start searching for it. And unless you put the effort in to learn where that destination is that you want to go to. The person I have here as a guest on the podcast, very special to me, is a Marine that I served with. Name's Jay, and he's the author of From Filth and Mud. And this book is a fiction book, and it's based on the life of a Marine who is trying to transition and find his way in the civilian world. And Jay himself has gone through some things involving his own transition. And we both had similar experiences in that while our brothers were being killed and shot at and off on deployments, we'd gotten out of the military. And we had to deal with the guilt of continuing on with our civilian lives, even though people we loved, people we served with, were overseas and not able to go on with their own transitions. So we're going to talk about all that today. We're going to talk about Jay's book. We're going to talk about some of his journeys. Jay is a lawyer, and he's also a BJJ practitioner, along with being an author. And we're going to talk about how each of these different things that he's incorporated in his life have helped him out and helped him to find his way. So, Jay, I want to welcome you to the Warrior Soul podcast. Tell us where you are today.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me, Chris. My home in Tampa, Florida, moved down here from Connecticut a couple of years back. And yeah, that's where I'm at now. Working on my second novel. It's called Paper Tigers. It's not a direct sequel of From Filth and Blood, but it takes place with different characters in the same universe as From Filth and Blood. Yeah, hopefully I should be able to have that out to market in mid-September. That's the time frame I'm shooting for. I'm a big-time procrastinator, so I like giving myself deadlines and throwing them out into the universe because then they actually mean something.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
So tell us about From Filth and Mud, your first book. Tell us about how you came up with the ideas, and I'm going to go into it with you a little bit about your process, how you develop the characters and things like that.
Yeah. So, From Filth and Mud, the general ideas came from, our, deployment in 2003. We were part of the same detachment, Det 3. you and I were, going up the Euphrates River, near Basra and Qusair and Azubayr in Iraq. And, it came from, just from being out in the Gulf at night, upriver, and kind of experiencing this like sense of being at a loss for thought, for words, for what was going on. I was 20 years old at the time, so a lot of this, like, I grew up in a very Bible-centric household, so, you know, I knew the Euphrates, the Tigris, and those were the rivers that the Garden of Eden was supposed to exist around. So yeah, being in the Euphrates and looking down into that filthy, disgusting, polluted, horrifying river, and just sitting there and going, really? This is it? That's kind of where the ideas that would eventually manifest into the book came from. But really, the book actually formed as a story back in 2005, 2 years after our deployment. And by this time, I was already starting to experience the sense of, like, of this, that something was missing. I remember ever since I got into the Marines and thinking, oh my God, this is the biggest mistake I've ever made. I can't wait to get out of here. That was kind of my thought process. I was always like, you know, the nerdy guy that didn't really like fit in, and I didn't know my place in the Marine Corps. And I was also 18 years old, so, you know, who knows who they are at 18, right?
Right.
And so when I got out, that feeling of euphoria of finally EASing, ending my enlistment, just went away after about a year, year and a half. And then 2 years out, I started feeling this sense of, like, loss, the sense of, like, I'm lost. And what am I doing in this college classroom? Just gotten the word that our unit was going to be deployed to Fallujah, and starting to get that, like, tug and pull between, okay, I've transitioned out. Now the unit's going to Fallujah, and that's going to be dangerous, and there's going to be bad stuff happening there. So, you know, you have this sense of, like, well, my brothers are going somewhere. But I'm already out. And, you know, how can I fight this dichotomy within me where at one point I couldn't wait to get out, and now I'm thinking maybe I should go back in. And fighting those feelings, and then, you know, thinking like, okay, what am I going to make of my life? What am I going to make career? What am I going to make out of my career? And I was thinking of going to law school at that time, because having a literature background, you know, doesn't really lead to employment. And so most English majors go to law school. And so that's actually where the first 10 pages of the book came from. And it was the scene where Jacob, the protagonist, is talking to his best friend, John. And they were both Marine Force Recon Marines. And they're having this discussion. And in the original work, and the idea behind it was really that discussion between myself. I pictured myself sitting at a booth and kind of having this discussion. And if you remember how Jacob is described in the scene where, like, the world, the weight of the world is on his shoulders and he's slumped over. He's just having this horrible depression and anxiety. And John is sitting there and it feels like, you know, there's no gravity around him. He's like pillared against the universe. And it was that scene that was in my head, like, you know, the part of me that is thinking about this loss and I'm in transition out. And the other part of me that's like, hey, man, remember, you used to be in the Marine Corps and maybe you should go back. So that's where that scene originated from, that transition feeling.
That's interesting. You know, a couple of things you said there, because, you know, that experience there on Euphrates, it had a huge impact on me as well. Cause I was thinking the exact same thing. I mean, I'm like, we're right near the biblical city of Ur. We're right near, you know, where the supposed Garden of Eden is. And,
right.
You know, it looks like hell on earth. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I also realized how lucky we were to basically be touring the Euphrates the entire time and not to have to deal with some of the things that our other brothers from our unit had to deal with down the line. And then that question of luck comes up and I'm like, well, who's actually lucky? You know, and we lost some good guys over there when you and I weren't there. And, you know, I think we're all lucky for our experiences. You know, we're all lucky for what the world has offered us and what fate has offered us. And, you know, maybe you and I were lucky to venture off and into a new adventure, even though that adventure might have started slowly. And maybe they're lucky because they got to experience some of the best of human nature in the face of some of the worst of human nature. You know, experience more of that brotherhood that we had in the Marine Corps. And at the same time, using that brotherhood to fight against something that was evil, you know?
Right.
With the book, going through the first chapter, I was, and when I read stuff like that, cause I just finished reading, Terminal Lance's book, The White Donkey. And a lot of times, I catch a lot of feels while I'm reading, you know what I mean?
Right.
Right. You know, I really felt for Jacob's situation. I felt for, what he was going through at the beginning of the book and that feeling of not really knowing, what kind of contribution he's going to make to the world, not knowing, you know, what his position is, what his place is on this earth. And I think a lot of guys out there are really going through that.
Right. It's like a lot of the emotional content of those first few chapters, especially when it's Jacob's, you know, passages and you're hearing his voice through the narrator, is really about that. Like, cause it harkens back to like, okay, most, or I would say all veterans in current and prior service, military personnel, you're past young age. I mean, I enlisted when I was 17 with my mom's signature and then shipped off when I turned 18. And most people in the military are about 18, 19 years old when they enlist and they go off. And all of a sudden, I mean, what 18-year-old would you trust with, like, heavy weapons, explosives, a 20-ton vehicle or an Abrams tank that's worth like $50 million. Things that you would never trust an 18-year-old kid to do in the civilian world. And they're thrust into that world. They're trusted to do these highly specialized, highly dangerous jobs. And then after a 4-year enlistment, most guys, most girls rotate out. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And now they're 22 and they're stuck in a college classroom or they're in a cubicle somewhere. And they have this feeling of, what kind of, where am I? Mm-hmm. It's that feeling of, you know, I'm lost. You know, I used to do really cool stuff out there in the real world, and this world is somehow not real. And so a lot of those chapters is that feeling of that transition, that really, you know, like, wow, all this cool stuff is going on that I'm missing out. I used to be part of it. Now where's my space in the universe?
Question for you. So how do you find that space? What do you do? What kind of processes do you have to go through?
Oh, man, it's hard. And honestly, I wish I had the answer because it's a daily grind for me.
Yeah.
Honestly, there are days where I feel like Jacob in the first couple of chapters and I'm sitting there like, maybe I should blow my brains out because I don't see the light.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, more recently, as I've tried to concentrate on those thoughts and try to take positive steps, those days are lesser and lesser. But it's a daily struggle. Like, no matter what you do, you kind of tend to always harken back to those days when you were in, like, when we were in the Euphrates. I mean, sometimes you don't feel more alive than that.
Right.
And it's that weird feeling of like, well, I'm going through life, but is this really life? And I remember working in offices and thinking like, you know, I'm interning because I'm in law school. And so I'm interning in different legal offices and sitting there and going, okay, I thought being a lawyer was like going to be, you know, life and death. And maybe I'll have clients that I can help out and do this. But a lot of the work is sitting in an office and you're going over contracts. And at the end of the day, you're like, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's a thing because I think back on it and, you know, the thing I hated about the Marine Corps most was hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
Just all the freaking just sitting there and waiting for something to happen. But, and that's why, you know, there were certain places that I absolutely hated. I absolutely hated Okinawa because we didn't do much there at all. I absolutely, you know,
except for SMTG, that was fun as hell.
Yeah, no, absolutely. but you know, while we were out there, you know, you have to be alert. You know, you're on patrol, you're going up the Euphrates, and you got to be alert. You got to see what's going on around you. And I think that forces you to be present. And that forces you to be here in the moment, focusing on what you're doing, and actually appreciating or getting an impression of everything that's going on around you. And I think the lesson there is this, that if we want to accomplish something, whether that is, you know, getting a bunch of civilian contractors in and out of Iraq alive, or whether that is trying to find success in the civilian world, or, you know, even if you're just trying to be good at a job, no matter what that job is, you know, being present and being in the moment and actually appreciating the opportunities that you have, and actually focusing on what's going on around you. Because I think one of the problems with guys who are in school is the very concept of school, the concept of college is, you know, we don't grow up to go to college. We don't grow up to you know, sit our butts in school and listen to what somebody else says. The very concept is one that we're waiting for the future to happen and we're waiting for something to happen. You know what I mean? And, have you found any way to bring yourself back to that kind of present state, that real appreciative state of being? Because from what I see, I mean, you wrote a pretty awesome book, and you know, you had to take the time to sit down there. So what gets you to do that? You know what I mean? Because you go through school, you get the law degree, and you live in the civilian life. What gets you to sit down every day after work or after doing what you're doing to write down, you know, 1,000, 2,000 words?
Dude, I'm glad you asked, because a lot of it, I remember last January when I finally sat down, because I had written those 10 pages 10 years ago, back in 2005, and I hadn't touched them since, but the story, because life got in the way, college and law school and my legal career and what am I going to do with my life? How am I going to make money? But every step of the way, I would get those moments where, like, the voices would come crashing through, because ever since I was little, that's what I liked to do. I liked writing. I would have these storylines and these characters in my head, and sometimes it felt like, you know, I'm just listening to their stories and their lives, and they have names and things like that. So I didn't understand up until recently that, you know, okay, I guess that's what writers kind of have going on. It's not that I'm crazy. But last year I couldn't, just with dealing with everything else, you know, figuring out that the legal career isn't exactly what I wanted to do. It's not, law wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I just got to the point of desperation, really. It's that, like, I'm going to have a panic attack if I don't just start writing and start putting this stuff down. And it was one of those things where I'd always put it in a goal, like, you know, on the top of a list. I'm going to publish a book one day. I'm going to write a book, and I want to be a writer. And then last year it got to the point, like, look, everything else is going so negative, like, in terms of career and what you're going to figure out with the world. Sit down and do this, because you have no other choice. It's almost like it was just like ripping through my consciousness that I needed to do this for myself, emotionally, intellectually, but more than anything else, just like out of desperation, this needs to get done.
Mm-hmm. And so when you would get to the keyboard, what kind of stuff was coming out? Because I hear from some writers, they say, you know, just get the words out and then look over it later. Right? Is that something you did too?
Well, you know, at the beginning, I would sit there and kind of, you know, I'd write stream of consciousness and, hey, I had storylines and that's great and dialogue going on. But then what would get in the way of my writing was my own personal shit, my own feelings. Like, am I feeling lonely today? Do I feel like, am I stressed out? Am I going to have a panic attack? Do I feel anxious? Am I freaking out about life? Yeah. Those dark voices that you wake up in the morning and you say, you're such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Those voices would get in the way. And I'm sitting there like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm going to fucking write? Like, go back to your legal career. What the fuck? Like, yeah. You know, do that. Do all the shit that hasn't worked out. Just go back and do it again. Because it's the easy way out. It's the way to just say, fuck it, I'm conforming, I'm going to go back to a cubicle, I don't fucking care, it's a steady paycheck, maybe I can drink myself to sleep when I come home. Mm-hmm. And so those voices would stop me until one day I just kind of had a breakthrough where I just had that negative fucking voice that always comes up and says, like, you're a piece of shit, you are a shitty Marine, like, in the voice of a drill instructor, like, you're a nasty civilian now.
Yeah.
You haven't amounted to shit. Like, you're a shitbag lawyer. You're a shitbag dad. Like, you're a shitty father. And I'm sitting there. I had that, like, moment where I was like, fuck it. I'm going to use this negative energy to write a really dark, horrible scene just comes out. So I started typing. And I finished it. I left the anger on the keyboard and went jogging with my dog, Goliath, for a couple of miles. Came back. And then I read what I had written. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was stream of consciousness, angry shit. And so as I started editing it down to something that could be used in the storyline, it almost felt like I was editing the emotions out of myself. So it helped. And so from then on, I started saying, fuck it. Even if I have days where I'm feeling like shit, I have writer's block, just get to the keyboard and write whatever comes to you. It doesn't have to be part of this book or the next book. It can be your short stories. It can be your jiu-jitsu blog. It can be anything, maybe poetry that I write for myself or something that'll never see the light of day. Just get it out, because it's a way of not only you increasing your word count for the day, but also kind of like filtering out your emotions and getting them out of you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so do you keep a journal as well as your written work?
Yeah. You know, I type out the stuff for myself as far as, you know, as far as the emotional shit that'll never get published, never see the light of day. But it helps, because you type it out, you put those words in there, and then you leave them. Mm-hmm. And then you come back and you read them, and you're like, oh. And what I found out is that it's like self-therapy, where there's a lot of negative shit that the voice inside your head says about you. And you're like, oh, this is worthless. Yeah, you're so bad at this. And then you put that down on the paper, and then you come back to it. And inevitably, at least for me, I don't know if it's some sort of bipolar thing where I'm going, where, you know, 1 hour it's this and the other hour I'm feeling positive. But inevitably, when I come back to it and I read those words, I'm like, wow, that's a little harsh, man. Like, you don't actually think that. That's kind of ridiculous. And then you think about what set it off, and you're like, oh, really? Like, you know, you drop something, and you know, two or three shitty little events in the morning piss you off that much that you're like, you're a piece of shit. So it kind of helps. And that's why I keep that.
Yeah. Yeah. I go through the same thing as an entrepreneur. I wrote a blog about it a few weeks ago, and same thing happens to me. I'll have a difficult day where I'm trying to get through a project, or I'm trying to get a shirt out, or maybe a shirt's not selling, or maybe something I'm working on just isn't working. Or maybe I'm even, you know, I'm not following the schedule like I should be following it.
And tell me about it. You know, damn schedules.
Absolutely. Because sometimes, you know, the world invades, and it's 2 or 3 o'clock before you actually get to do something creative. And you know, I get hard on myself. I get hard on myself so much. And I've had nights where I couldn't get to sleep, and I'd start like hyperventilating in bed because, you know, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Why the fuck am I here? I'm not fucking, you know, why is my girlfriend next to me right now? I'm not going to be able to provide anything for her. You know what I mean? She could go find somebody else, that kind of stuff. And you know, that's
I wonder that about my wife all the time. I'm like, why the fuck are you with me? Yeah. I'm so fucking worthless.
Yeah, no, exactly. But the problem I think with it is, or maybe it's healthy that we talk about it. Maybe it's healthy that we at least admit that it's there. I think the problem comes when we actually don't acknowledge it, and when we actually don't acknowledge that it's there, and we try to go on like everything's okay and everything's fine, and it's not, because you can't hide from your own subconscious. You know, you can deny your subconscious, but you can't hide from it. And when you start to hide from it, it starts to manifest itself in one way or another. And it could lead to some really bad things, you know.
Self-hate, you're just sitting there like, I'm such a piece of shit, like quickly turns into, well, if you're such a piece of shit, nothing's happening, you might as well blow your fucking brains out, because, you know, who the fuck cares?
Absolutely, and it creeps up on you at the worst possible time, like when you're when you're trying to do something like write a book that's going to, you know, help you, when you're trying to start a company, when you're trying to, you know, complete a law degree, when you're trying to complete college, that kind of stuff, that's when it starts to sneak up on you. Anything you try to do to improve your life. So I guess the lesson for everybody at home is, one, acknowledge that it's there, and then two, figure out something that you could pour it into, you know, whether that be writing, whether that be something like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, whether that be something like running or weightlifting, but figure out what your thing is that you're going to pour all that negativity into, and try to turn it into a positive.
Right. And, you know, I found that, like, not only is it good to get that emotion, you know, for me, onto the keyboard and write, and you know, that helps that little hamster wheel keep going into in a positive way, but also as far as getting my body physically active. Because the worst times for me was that those times during law school where I'm busy just reading and doing busy work to learn the material and memorize it for exams and process that, that I was ignoring working out. Mm-hmm. I've always run. I've always, you know, at least done some light lifting, something like that. And I ignored it for a couple of years in law school. And it was the worst thing I could have done because all that negativity mentally, like I used to dispel it by working out, getting that energy out. And now I had that excess energy plus negativity. And then my body started reacting. I started getting ulcers or, you know, not full-blown ulcers, but like on my way there with horrible heartburn, H. pylori was in my system. And I was, you know, being negligent with my body and not paying attention. And so, you know, ever since I moved down here to Tampa, I was like, look, I got to work out. I got to find something to do. And luckily for me, one of my, you know, bucket list items was, hey, one day I want to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because I've always, you know, enjoyed watching. I saw the original UFCs. I wonder what it's going to be like. So I started doing that. And one really good benefit that I found from it that not only as far as fitness, but it helped me a lot being in the present. Finding that thing where I have to physically and mentally and emotionally be in the present when I'm doing BJJ, because on the mat, if you're not paying attention, if you let your mind slip, if you're caught in your mind in a cycle of like, oh, what am I feeling like today? And today's a shitty day. You're going to get your arm barred. You're going to get your foot locked. You're going to get choked out.
Yep.
So you don't have that. It forces you to be right there in this moment, and you're battling with this other person who's your training partner, and you're trying to, you know, harm each other in a non-harmful way, but it forces me to just let everything go. As soon as I get into class, I know as soon as I get through those doors, I tie on my gi, or if I'm doing no-gi, I put in my no-gi stuff. I just know everything has to be left out, because here I'm getting a workout, but not only that, I have to be present with like 100% of my brain, because if not, it's going to be a shitty time on the mats because I'm going to get choked out every 2 seconds or arm barred. So yeah, I found that's really helpful. Finding an activity where you're not only physically exhausting yourself, but it requires your full focus.
Mm-hmm. What was your schedule like while you were writing the book? Like, so what would a typical day look like?
So what I would do was last January, when it was a Friday night where I said, fuck it, if I'm going back to work on Monday, I'll either quit right this second or I'm going back to work on Monday. But either way, I have to start writing. So Friday night, I came back and just started working from like 8 o'clock at night, put the boys down, 9 o'clock. I just started typing till 2 in the morning. And basically, that's what I was doing. I was going to work, coming back home, eating something, giving the boys a bath, putting them down real quick. And by 8:30, 9 o'clock every night, I was writing till 1, 2 in the morning, or as far as I could without passing out. I was like, it has to get done. I have to get this manuscript done. And so I got to about 30, 40,000 words in. And I remember when I told my wife, I was like, listen, hon, I think this book's coming along really well. I hate my fucking job. And there is nothing positive about this job. I need to leave it because I'm going to lose my fucking mind if I don't leave this job. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten far enough into this book that I know that I'm going to finish this book. And there's enough here for it to be a good book. So I'm going to quit this stupid job and work contract jobs, find some attorney jobs, some lawyer jobs as on a contract basis and do that. And so, about summer of last year, with about halfway through the book to go, I decided, okay, that's it. I put in my 2 weeks, left the shitty job, and I was like, fine, I'll work on a contract basis and clear my schedule to concentrate on finishing the manuscript and then on the editing process. So what ended up happening was I got about a month free to write where I finished the manuscript, and then I started working again these contract jobs. So it got back to the cycle of, okay, around 8 o'clock at night, 2 in the morning, I'm doing my writing, my editing, things like that. Up until, I remember Thanksgiving of last year, I was doing my third round of editing. And then right Christmas Eve, I'm sitting there till 3 in the morning just putting the final edits before the full manuscript, like before the final book goes to the publishers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, I mean, it took a lot, but it was it was worth it, and it was damn worth it for me in terms of, could I do this? I have to do this.
What was that feeling like when you finally sent the book off to the publisher? Like, would you feel, would you do, was there, like, any celebration? What happened?
You know, I had bought this bottle of champagne, like, really expensive champagne, and I was like, this is it. It's going to be a celebration and everything. Once I, you know, for me, it was once I finished the manuscript, and that was last summer, and I finished the manuscript and I was started reading over it. I'm like, this is such a piece of shit. It's worthless. I'm going to keep this cork until I finish the book. So Christmas Eve came and went and the book's out to the publisher. And then I just felt this feeling of, it wasn't euphoria. It was, oh no, now it's out in the world. Now it's out to be judged.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, and that bottle is still there. That bottle is still there. And I, you know, I keep moving the goalposts. I'm like, you know, I'm just not ready. I'm not 100% sure on, you know, my career as a writer. It's weird. It's, you know, I wish I could sit back and say, open that bottle and say, I've arrived and this is great.
What do you think is going to get you to open that bottle?
I don't think any single event. I think, it's my mindset. I'm going to have to come to terms with myself on that one and say, okay, you've done enough. You've earned it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could look at that in a couple of different ways. I mean, the first thing is, you know, I tell people there is no end game. The end game is death, right?
Right, right.
So you're never going to really stop your pursuit of what you want to do until you die. Right. You know, I look at people who retire and I look at people who have stopped working, and the only healthy ones I know are people who've found something else. People who've been on point with finding something else that they could do. The other way to look at it though, is that at some point you're going to have to congratulate yourself, man. And at some point you're going to have to, you know, feel that pride and allow yourself to feel it. You know what I'm saying?
It's weird, man. There's only been very few points in my life as an adult where I could remember I was proud of doing something. Like, I still remember getting my EGA in front of the Iwo Jima Memorial on Paris Island. And I was in tears, and my drill instructor, Staff Sergeant Henderson, came up to me and he puts the EGA in my hand, salutes me, and he goes, you know, congratulations, Marine. He goes, Cologne, you surprised the shit out of me. I didn't think you were going to make it. And I felt like, yes, I made it. But yeah, I don't know if it's a Marine thing or if it's just our personality type thing where it's hard to be self-congratulatory.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard to be satisfied, but I think at some point you're gonna have to do that. You're gonna have to say to yourself, you know what, I did this. This is freaking awesome. And the reason why you got to do it is because you got to love yourself at some point. And I don't want to talk, man. You know, no matter what I do, I'm always looking for something else. I'm always looking for something new to do. But I think it's something we all have to try to practice, because. And maybe congratulations isn't opening up a bottle of champagne. Maybe it's, you know, spending some time with your wife, spending some time with your family, the people who you love, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I'm sure you're doing that as well. I'm just saying, at some point, I think we have to allow ourselves to be human, and allow ourselves to be people. You know what I mean? Yeah. So BJJ, talked a little bit about how you were training for that. Did that help you with writing the book? Do you take any of the concepts of jiu-jitsu and apply them to life? And what kind of lessons have you learned from it?
Yeah, it helps, number one, emotionally, getting all that, like, crazy physical energy out of me. Because that contributes to anxiety and things like that for me. I've always needed to be physically active, even though, you know, I've always been the nerdy, small, skinny kid everywhere I've been. I weigh about 150 now. That's my walking around weight. At the end of a jiu-jitsu class, I'm probably 145. Just that 5 pounds of sweat are in my gi. I was 145 when I went into boot camp. I got out at 130 because it was nothing but starvation and running. But yeah, I've always been a small guy, and I've always needed an outlet for my energy. I've always been kind of a hyper person. So even in class and school, when I was a little kid, I couldn't really concentrate because I needed to talk to people or go outside and run around in circles. So I found that jiu-jitsu helps me get rid of all that excess energy, and I can focus my emotions and my thoughts onto the keyboard and get my writing done. It's also, I have a jiu-jitsu blog where I kind of take like science, which I'm passionate about, and jiu-jitsu and kind of a little comedy, a little self-deprecation, and involve that into a blog called On the Gentle Art. So it's up on my website. I have a few followers, a lot of BJJ people, a lot of people who are interested in science get a kick out of it too. You won't learn techniques there, but you'll kind of like follow me along my experience, my little journey so far. I've been practicing for 2.5 years now. So, I mean, physically and emotionally, it helps me do that. It keeps me in great shape. But also, it kind of gives me, it kind of makes me realize, like, it's problem solving on the move, 100% focus required. And that helps transition to, okay, what am I going to do? And how am I going to tackle that situation? Well, you know, I could go ahead full on and just tackle it the way I've been tackling it, or find a different way. And sometimes, with jiu-jitsu, it's like, well, I'm not going to pin this bigger guy to the ground and force his arms apart and wrench his arms back with my tiny little body. But if I learn the technique and I apply it accurately and correctly, I'll move aside of his strength, move around, tire him out a little bit, and then maybe I can apply the technique 100% of it. And it doesn't work 100% of the time, but every now and then you go, oh shit, this works.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What belt level are you right now?
I'm a blue belt. I have one stripe on my blue belt, and that's usually takes about a year and a half to get your blue belt. So I've been doing it 2.5 years now. I go 3-4 times a week, depending on my schedule. When I'm working contracts, it's hard to get to more than twice a week, which sucks because, you know, that's when I need to de-stress. But yeah, it's awesome. Work the first class in when I'm getting choked out by a 150-pound like woman who's like smiling and all happy, and 2 seconds later, I'm on the floor, like, as the world is closing in around me. Like, what the fuck just happened?
That's awesome.
And the worst thing is, she was wearing a pink gi, and she smelled of perfume, and was like, oh, hey, maybe next time you should tap out sooner. And I'm like,
oh, okay. My God. That's crazy. That's crazy. Oh, boy. But we've all been there.
You know? It's like with anything, you know, anything you try, you know, there's no such thing as being an expert at everything, and anything new that you're going to succeed at, guess what? You're going to suck at.
Absolutely. My girlfriend she was a collegiate track athlete.
Oh, geez.
And, you know, running with her or doing it, because she's a freaking stud, man. She's a girl, and she could do 10 pull-ups really easily. She can friggin' do it. And I could do 20 pull-ups, but actually, I did 25 last week. I'm proud of myself for that. But
awesome. First-class PFT.
Yeah, exactly. But we did a Spartan race, like, last year, and it was a Spartan beast, and we did – it was 12 and a half miles. And, you know, I was a power lifter. I promised myself when I got out of the Marine Corps I would never run again. But, you know, I decided I wanted to get back into it. She wanted to do a Spartan race, so I trained for this thing. And we're going, and she's running. She's like, oh, I'm having such a good time. This is awesome. And I'm over here, you know, my 36-year-old self, and she's 10 years younger than me. She's
damn.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ, don't ever ask me to do this again. but yeah, we're going to do another Spartan race at the end of the summer.
Nice.
You know, I kind of got bitten by the bug, and I do like training for stuff, and I don't want to do bodybuilding or powerlifting anymore. So it'll be cool. It's a new challenge, a new thing for me to get better at, you know. And I've kind of let go of that whole I need to be the strongest person in the world, that kind of thing, and that kind of stuff. I still stay strong. I still squat. I still front squat. I still deadlift. I still do presses. But the whole ego thing, the idea that, you know, I want to get an Instagram shot of me deadlifting 5 plates. Yeah, that's not happening anymore. That's not happening anymore. So maybe
already put them up, so they'll last forever on the internet.
Yeah, maybe 4 plates, but not 5 plates right now. Cool, man. So back to the book.
Yeah.
If there's one nugget or golden piece of advice that you want people to get, or one perspective that you want the reader to get from the book, what is that?
Well, you know, as you read it, it's a science fiction thriller. I call it science fiction, but I don't want people to think it's like, you know, galaxy far, far away, thousands of years in the future. It's more like a Michael Crichton type science fiction, where it's like a Jurassic Park, where they take, you know, science that's maybe just over the horizon, but pull it to the now and see what kind of story would develop if it went haywire. So it's that kind of science fiction, so more like a techno thriller. So even though it's a fiction and a techno thriller with a heavy science contingent in it, it's the story is really Jacob, the protagonist, who's this Marine in transition, who he's clamoring at the beginning of the book for an adventure. Even though he's not saying it, if you read all the narration, you're like, well, he needs an adventure to break out of this suburban life that just keeps cycling around him, and he's just kind of like there. And so the adventure comes, and he goes off on the adventure, and he ends up, without giving much about the book away, he ends up, the story arcs back to Iraq, where he kind of, you know, has lost his soul, and he has to reclaim it through this epic adventure that he's on. So really, I guess the lesson for the book would be, you know, maybe some of the listeners to the podcast aren't big time into science fiction, or maybe aren't into thrillers, or maybe aren't into fiction. They're like, what's this story about? It's just made up. But it's more like, well, wouldn't we all like to go on this exciting quest? And some of us need this, you know, or at least we yearn for this quest, like from what we used to be. Mm-hmm. And can we recapture that? And how cool would it be? And not only how cool would it be, but in terms of like how much of that would actually affect our lives. You know, we're sitting in the suburbia, the world is going on around you. Wow, you get this opportunity to go on this really cool quest, and at the end of the quest, it's really, you come to face yourself, and your own worst enemy is yourself. And the resolution, the redemption, is through that, facing yourself at the end and breaking through that, and whatever that means to you. And then, you know, it's funny because they say that I'm trying to remember the author who said this. It might have been Hemingway, that the writer the writer writes the words, but it's the reader who interprets them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as you read the story, you're going to get whatever it is that you're coming to it with. You know, my writer and my emotions are there kind of to suck in the reader and put you in the place of Jacob at the beginning where he's just, life is horrible and you're just like, oh my God, is he going to kill himself in the next page? And then you get into that world through his viewpoint and you follow the story. But really what you get out of it, it is really up to you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And I always say that, you know, our worst enemies are ourselves. Our worst enemies are the circus that's going on in our own head. And the key, I think, to getting around a lot of that is understanding that it is, in fact, a circus. Understanding that it is, in fact, just stuff that we're making up. And, you know, we make ourselves into the evil ringmaster of that circus, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And it's nothing but ego. Mm-hmm. I mean, to think that the world revolves around you, or that you're such a piece of shit that you're ruining everybody's life, or, you know, the world even, like, cares.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it, a lot of those thoughts that I deal with on a daily basis, that you deal with on a daily basis, all the negativity the listeners are dealing with on a daily basis, really is just as fictitious as my book is.
Yep.
It's going on an adventure. All this cool stuff is happening. I could have added dragons. I could have added ninjas and fairies. And none of that would have been less real than the negative thoughts in my head that sometimes prevent me from sitting at the keyboard and writing, or get in the way of me thinking, like, am I going to make this phone call to this publicist today? Am I going to make this phone call to this agent? Agents haven't gotten back to me. Oh my God, I'm such a piece of shit. This book is horrible. All of that is as fictitious as the book that I wrote, and that's in print now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool, man. What type of advice would you give, say, a young Marine who is trying to write his own book? What would you say to them?
I mean, if you're in the Marine Corps, out of the Marine Corps, whatever it is that you want to write, and, you know, I'm coming in from it from the my emotional standpoint, regret, self-hatred, anger, all that stuff. But even if you don't have those, even if you're like, dude, my Marine Corps experience was the best ever, I love it, whatever, but I want to write, really is write it, sit down in front of a keyboard, or if you're doing pen to pencil, you know, pen and pencil on a green monster in the field, which I used to do a lot of. I used to write poems in the field on the green monster and sit there, which I still have. They're pretty ridiculous. But, if you're doing that, do it. Just keep doing it. And the second part of it, not only do it, but do it true to yourself. Do it true to those emotions that you're feeling. If you want to write it a certain way, write it that way. Don't think that, oh, it's going to be embarrassing if I write it this way. It's too emotional. I'm putting myself too vulnerable out there. Or it's too angry. People are going to think I'm crazy. Whatever it is that you actually want to write, honestly, the thoughts that are in your head that you're saying, write those. And make sure you write them. Like, even on the worst days, make sure you write them. Because eventually, the reality is, there's no conspiracy against you. Nobody's stopping you. Nobody's standing there going, judging you like, that's a shitty word. Nobody cares. Because the reality is, you can publish the book, throw it out there, and nobody reads it. So why are you worried? Why are you worried about the vulnerabilities that you're exposing yourself to? Mm-hmm. That's the reality. Nobody's stopping you. And you're at this point where you're already published. You're going to try your damnedest to get people to pay attention to it because people are busy with their lives doing everything else. And you're like, I went from, oh, shoot, should I put this in Jacob the character? And are people going to read through him to me and go, oh, man, this guy wants to kill himself and he's so vulnerable, to, fuck it, somebody read my book. Anybody read my book, you know? Once it's done, you're like, this is my baby. I want people to look at it. I want people to, like, give me advice, feedback, because, you know, for me, this is going to be my career, so I want feedback. I need reviews. I want reviews. Go to Amazon.com, leave reviews from Filth and Mud. If there are literary agents listening out there, I pitched a bunch of you. I'm waiting for the callbacks.
Yeah.
But yeah, write it honestly to yourself. Just make sure you do it.
But that's a good point too. Once you're done with the book, kind of the real work begins where,
oh yeah,
you know, you got to get out there and market the thing.
Oh man, I was busy writing the book because I'm a writer. I finished the book and like a week before I'm like, oh shoot, I got to turn this in. I got to get this done. I was thinking, oh my God, what about cover art? I don't have any idea about cover art. What's gonna go on this stupid book?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm freaking out. And then I have to figure out, oh, cover art design. Got to contact cover artists. What do I do with integration software? I mean, that's when the real work begins. When you finish your beautiful baby manuscript and then you're like, oh, crap. I got to somehow get cover art on this. I got to get back art. I got to get some pictures on. I've got to promote it. I've got to get a social media following. I've got to send it to literary agents. You know, big publishers. You're hoping one day a big publisher will pick it up. You know, Simon & Schuster or Harlequin Press, please give me a call.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
Awesome. Yeah, no, definitely. Cool. Any last pieces of advice or anything like that you want to tell the audience out there?
Yeah, I know a lot of the listeners. I'm one of the listeners, so I know a lot of them are people like us, vets, active duty, maybe people who haven't been in the military but are still going through, you know, their own struggles, as mm-hmm. most people are. It's basically just, you got to push through every day. You got to find a way. Whatever it is, you got to hang your hat on that for that day. Don't be ashamed. Just hang your hat on it for that day. Use it as your crutch for the day. If it's gonna get you through that day, mm-hmm. use it and do it, because, you know, there was a spat last fall, last winter, where guys from our unit, you know, they took their lives and they contributed to that, you know, 22 veterans killing themselves. And that is 22 a day, right?
So it's actually controversial.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said before, I don't like talking about it much. But and the reason I don't like talking about it is because of social proof. More people hear about suicides, the more likely right. they are to commit suicide. It's just like more people hear about mass shootings, the more likely they are to do mass shootings, and then everybody blames guns. But yeah.
right.
But the thing is, it's actually at one a day, which is still high, which is still really right. high, you know. And
but yeah, so you know, not trying to go down that rabbit hole, but really, you know, anything you can do to be a survivor, like you were saying earlier, you don't have to be the strongest person in the world, and evolution doesn't require you to be. Neither does survival. Some of my toughest characters in my writing are very physically weak, you would think emotionally weak characters. They're not the typical like alpha male hero where they used to be and they've fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
But they're surviving, and I think that's the key. You know, you could be the smiling, happy, go-lucky person, like sweet little girl, and then you could be like the brooding Viking-looking guy in the corner ready to kill somebody, but you're both breathing, you're both in the same room, you're both survivors. So, you know, that's kind of like, you know, my words of wisdom is that use whatever you can to get through the day. Those days then become weeks, months, and before you know it, if you put your efforts into something, you end up with a book, you end up with a clothing line, you end mm-hmm. up with a promotion, a job, whatever it was that was your goal at the beginning when you started first taking those steps, you'll eventually get to it. You just got to figure out a way to make it through each day.
Awesome. Very cool, man. So I want to thank you, and I want to acknowledge you for coming on here. I want to acknowledge you for remaking yourself and for fighting that fight and getting through the difficulties. Because as I told you before we started the podcast, I've started 5 different books and haven't finished any of them. And all of them are nonfiction. And it's just, I know how difficult it is to sit alone in front of a blank screen, which in a lot of ways I think is almost even more scary than a drill instructor can be. And because the blank screen, it's like a screaming abyss where you can't ever fill it up properly. You can't, you know, and you can try to put your soul into it. You can try to you know, make magic happen, but unless certain things are right within you, it's really hard to do. And you've got to go through a lot of self analysis and self growth to be something, to do something like this. But thank you for coming on here and talking to everybody and giving us your story and telling us about your book. Where can people find your book?
Yeah. So, the book is called From Filth and Mud, and, you can find it on Amazon.com as an ebook. It sells for $2.99, the Kindle version. Now, you don't need Kindle to have it. You can get the Kindle app for your phone, for whatever kind of tablet, for your PC, and to download the book From Filth and Mud as an ebook version. Or you can buy it on Amazon.com, the print edition. Or you can go to CreateSpace, the publisher, at createspace.com and buy it there. Or you could contact me and I will send you a autographed copy of the book, an author's edition. So I'll make sure I have a personalized autograph for you guys. And you can get that through my website, jmanuelwrites.com. That's J-M-A-N-U-E-L Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S.com. And you can find my social media links there. I'm J. Manuel Writes at Twitter, on Facebook, as well as Instagram. So, one other thing, and an important thing, I'm also donating half of my royalties to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. They deal with, it's a really good cause. 85% of their donations goes directly to research and treating patients. They basically pick up every single penny of the tab for taking care of children. Their families can stay there for free as well. It's a really good cause. It's inspired by the research that I did into my book, because this is a science fiction book based on bioengineering and things like that. So once you start reading the book, you'll realize why St. Jude is a big deal. But yeah, I also, the reason for the book donations is I'm going to try to do this with every single one of my books. Basically, use half of the royalties that I make to donate to good causes like this. I kind of have a feeling like, you know, this is art. You are getting something from art. Me writing it, you and the reader reading it. But I also would like to use it to kind of benefit people and good causes. People doing good things, good causes. For me, I have two little boys, so what more, what a better, what better way to basically give back than to give to St. Jude. There are links to my website, so on my website to St. Jude's donation page directly, if you don't want to buy the book but want to donate, that's great. I post copies of the checks that I send out from the royalties on Instagram, so you can see them there, and I'm going to add a little donation chart to my website as well.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and we're going to put all that information in the show notes and along with Jay's bio, and maybe possibly I'll get a picture of us back when we're younger, better looking gentlemen on the Euphrates River. I found a picture actually, and it's funny because you're holding up the Marine Corps flag. I'm sitting in front of you. We're in the middle of the Persian Gulf, I think, and I'm flexing. Like, I'm trying not to look like I'm flexing, but I'm flexing. It's pretty damn funny. So maybe I'll put that up there too.
Yeah, and I probably have my stupid grin on my face. I'm like, it's like, who's Gomer Pyle? Who's doing the shot? Everyone looks like a badass except that guy.
Nah, man, you look great. You look great. There's certain other people that we won't talk about that I'm sure you and I both can talk about more once we get offline that don't look so great. But but anyways, dude, it was great having you on. It's great seeing one of my Marines succeed so well, and it's awesome.
Forgot to tell the listeners, you were my fire team leader.
Yes, I was.
Corporal Albert.
I like to think I was a good one, but I'm sure
you were a good one.
All right.
I've had bad ones. And I'm sure I didn't make a great one either.
That brings me back. That brings me back. And I hadn't heard Corporal Albert in a long time.
Yeah.
I got my sergeant's warrant about, I think it was a month after my discharge.
And get out.
Yeah, dude, because they were like, dude, you stay in. You're going to get sergeant if you stay in. I'm like, no. And then my sister was actually getting married at some point. Mm-hmm. And then the warrant came in the mail, and I got it, and I was like, yes!
And awesome! Like, yes!
Awesome, yeah.
Dude, First Sergeant Gould, I remember when it was my time to go, he was like, no, you're going to stay. You're not leaving. And I was like, I'm going to leave. And he's like, you know what? I guarantee you, I'm going to see you here in a couple of days. I was like, you will never see my face again for a sergeant. And he's like, but you'll pick up sergeant. Just stay. And I'm like, no. I'm gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Those little decisions we make.
But yeah. Yeah.
To each and every person out there, whether you're a veteran or an active duty service member or a student, if you're writing down ideas in a notebook or a green monster, or if you are doodling and making pictures and doing some form of art, you know, go with it, explore it, you know, maybe take a trip down the rabbit hole just to see where it leads you. Because at the end of the day, you might be doing something that could change your life. And for a lot of you, you might be doing something that could save your life. So I want to thank each and every one of you today for listening to us and, explore your passion, find your curiosity, and explore everything that this life has for us. And so until next week, guys, I will talk to you all soon.